Hello and welcome to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. I'm Richard Moore. This is a special edition from the Team Sky training camp in Mallorca. I'm with Orla Shinawi from Sky Sports News. Hello, Orla.
Hello, Richard.
We're in the games area. Actually, we're surrounded by, it's a kind of gallery here.
The Hall of Fame.
Jerseys signed to the hotel. There's a yellow jersey over there. That looks like Bradley Wiggins' yellow jersey from 2012.
It is indeed.
So, Orla, we've been out here for a couple of days doing interviews, and we'll play some of those interviews in a moment. You were out, I think, with them on the ride yesterday, not actually riding, but you observed a six-hour training ride.
I didn't want to show them up by getting on my bike myself. Yeah, we were out for them just for an hour and a half as they set off here. They all look in good shape. They're looking in good form. It was a fairly standard ride by all accounts, but a few efforts were done. So we had Edvald Boasenhagen and Ben Swift doing a few sprint efforts. Bradley Wiggins doing a few climbing efforts as well. He came past us at one stage looking absolutely exhausted, only then to say, just missing, as he went past. So he's clearly in good spirits. But yeah, the guys are looking good and training hard, as you would imagine at this time of the year.
You would. We haven't seen Wiggins for a while, I guess, and he's bearded Bradley Wiggins.
He is.
Who we spoke to yesterday after the ride. He was in sort of bullish form. He's often in bullish form, isn't he? But it was very interesting, I thought, what he said about wanting this, what he wants to do this year. What struck me is he's always been very goal-driven. His career has always been about setting goals and being very focused about achieving those goals, whether they be Olympic gold medals, winning the Tour de France. He doesn't seem to have any real specific goals this year. It's a bit more vague. It's more of a kind of status that he wants to achieve. That was my sense.
Yeah, I think that's probably fair enough. He has stated Paris-Roubaix as one of his actual targets.
Without defining what success would mean there.
But I think maybe he's learned from last year to not put it out there, because then he's judged by it. And we know that part of the reason he really wasn't going for the Tour de France last year as defending champion was because he didn't want to be defined by anybody else's standards or by his past. So I think he's probably learned to just resign himself to that, have his own goals and not necessarily put it out there, so that he's not then judged, success or failure is not judged by what he set himself out to do. But I think you're very right in that he wants to achieve a status now. He's wanting to crack America. He's wanting to fill that void that Lance Armstrong...
Not really sure what that means, cracking America. He wants to win the Tour of California.
But he wants to establish himself as a figure, a cycling figure in America. I think that's quite clear with his new relationship with Simon Fuller, his agent. And I think that's all to do with, as you say, the status thing. It's not even so much the achievements.
It's a less tangible thing, I suppose.
Again, is easier to not be judged on, if that makes sense.
That's very true. That's very true. It's not. It can't be judged as success or failure. The terms are being defined by him. But what he said was very interesting and inevitably quite controversial. He did sort of make this comment that only a handful of previous Tour winners don't have skeletons in the closet, don't have doping history. Which is a quote that people have leapt on today, obviously. But he's very, the fact that he's willing to say that and try to make good on those words and try to, as he put it, spread that message is a very interesting kind of mission to be on. And I can't remember a previous Tour winner ever saying something like that.
Well, I think that, again, is part of his whole aim to... Okay, maybe crack America is the wrong way to put it, but get his name out there beyond simply the core cycling fans. And as you say, it was leapt upon on social media, Twitter, etc. But there is criticism if people defend the so-called Amerta. Then there's criticism if people come out and tell what they see to be the truth. And I think he's got to be applauded for actually telling it like it is, because there aren't an awful lot of Tour de France winners that we could confidently say haven't doped, really.
No, well, let's hear a little bit from Bradley Wiggins from the interview with him yesterday. Here he is talking on a range of subjects. We'll pick out some of the best bits in a moment.
Yeah, good. I've had a good winter. I think, you always go on last year, what you were doing this time last year, in complete contrast to where I was at this time last year. I just feel ready to go, ready to stop racing, wanting to race, which I think is the main thing. It's a little bit like it was 2 years ago, when I was here before 2012, so... That's always a good sign for me, being happy.
Dave was saying earlier that that you sort of
come to terms with Tiger 12? Do you feel now?
Yeah, definitely. I sort of started to come to terms last summer watching somebody else do it, I think. And missing the tour as well, which I think was a blessing in disguise for me, really. I think then going through all the same things this winter, like going back to sports personality and seeing someone else win it, and then realising what... God, that was me last year, and all those things, I think that's... time is a great healer in so many ways, really, and I wouldn't say it was something to heal, but it was definitely taking it all as it came last year and through the winter, and then getting to January and just being... having that big sort of hangover from... the whole year, really, and then the prospect of, God, I guess it's the start now, I've got to do it all again. And it's not necessarily the training thing, because I've never struggled with the training, I've never struggled going out and training hard, but once we got into the racing, it definitely felt like going through the motions. And so, as I say, it's a complete contrast to where I'm at now. I'm looking forward to it. To be honest, most of the winter, my goal through the winter was to get back to the physical level I was at the end of last season in 2012, but from the start of the season, with no kind of things of saying, well, I want to get back to the tour, I want to do this, I want to do that. It was just that process of starting 1st of November, this is where I need to be by Christmas, then this is where I need to be by the end of January. But then as time goes on, I mean, I didn't really have a sit down this winter with the directors and Dave and that and say, well, what do you want to do next year? Because I think for me it was about hitting the ground running as I did in 2012 and picking up from where I left off at the Worlds. And but as time has gone on, I think the goals that I do have, you know, they've changed a little bit to other years. So I'm going to Tirreno for the first time. I've never been to Tirreno. That's not a goal, but it's the first time I'll be back with Chris, and I'm assuming that Chris will want to race well there as he did last year. So it'd be nice to be back there racing together, supporting him, and being physically able to do that job, because I went to Oman with that role last year, and I was struggling, to be honest. Really, I wasn't able to do the job. So it'd be nice to be back in those races and able to do a job that warrants being in this team, really. And then after that, I've got San Remo, a couple of the classics in Belgium, till Roubaix, and then after Roubaix, my focus then is sort of to Tour of California, really, which is a race that I want to try and win. And then after that, all being well, I should slot straight back into the pre-tour program, which is Dauphiné altitude camps. But it's kind of small steps at this stage, just thinking small blocks, really, rather than trying to say, well, and just assuming that I'm going to be in that position at the tour. So coming right back to the start, really, and hitting those sort of goals along the way. And they're not all performance goals. Some of them are just literally kind of, let's say, getting out of bed in the morning, but training goals, really, and always assessing where we were at in the past. So I think that's quite important for me.
You've always been very goal-driven, Brad, whether it be Olympics or tour or whatever. So has this felt like a different process? It felt like liberating in a way to have that sort of...
A little bit, because, I mean, obviously I'm not carrying the burden anymore, if you like, that I did carry for 4 years, really, of is he going to win the tour? Are you ever capable? Do you think you can win the Tour de France? You know, all that. I did do that. Chris has now taken that mantle, if you like, and he's set to perhaps dominate the sport or dominate the Tour de France for the next few years. So, yeah, it's kind of a little bit of a different change, really. But I think to be able to get back to the Tour de France, really, I think you need to be in shape to at least be on the podium in this team now, to be able to play that supporting role. And the way Richie did last year, Richie was capable of being on the podium himself. And then in the year before with Chris and Michael Rogers and Richie again. So it's the standard of this team is so high now. So, you know, I almost need to be back in tour winning form to even perform a role, because there's no point pulling maximal for 2 minutes, swinging off at the bottom of a climb and then losing 30 minutes. I think, you know, to really do the team justice, do Chris justice, and that you need to be there when it really matters at those crucial moments. So that's my goal, is to get back to that. So, which is a different goal. It's not necessarily a winning goal. But in being in that condition and able to do that, I'm going to win races, maybe time trials, but hopefully in the Tour. And races before that, you know, as I say, things like Tour of California. I'd love to be up there in Roubaix. Roubaix, when you look at the demands of it, once all the fighting's done, if you like, on them early sectors, it gets down to just the physical side of things, really. It's about spending long periods of time on your own, which I'm good at.
This is your last year of the contract, Team Sky. Have you spoken to them about it?
No, Dave pushed me a few times. You know, we need to get it sorted, etc. But to be honest, the contract will always be there. You know, I feel part of the fabric of this team. And I've been in, you know, a couple of years ago when I was with the French teams, it was always a worry. Oh, Shane got a contract at the end of this year. And he's trying to get something sorted. But I'm kind of at this point now where, I wouldn't say you take it for granted, but, you know, as the next, it's always going to be there. So it's not something I'm panicking about. I don't want to get it signed and sealed and sorted out. No, I just want to have a really good season on the road and then talk about this. Not like it's not going to be there in 7 months' time. So, and I think it would be wrong, really, now to start talking contracts when we haven't really got this season out of the way. So I think I just want to, like I say, you know, when I won the tour last year, you know, we were talking for 4 years, but I said to Dave, I only want to reassess in two and go from there. I didn't want to sort of be tied in for too long because I don't know what the goals are going to be. The goals change all the time, and I think, you know, it's, that's my priority this year.
California, I mean, that's obviously a goal to try, you said, to try and win it. I understand you bought a place in LA. Is that wrong? Is that wrong?
Yeah,
it's
no.
A rumour.
I haven't bought a place in
LA. But you're signed with a new agency now, which has a strong interest in the American
market. No, I spent time
market.
There this winter.
Yeah.
I love it there. Cycling is huge there, you know, and there's a huge void there as well. Just walking around the place during the winter, I was there on holiday. People coming up to me, packed at the airport, you know, and it's, and that as a British
it's
cyclist.
In LA, in California,
yeah. And there's a huge cycling community there as well. And I've ridden Tour of California in 2008, and obviously the race has moved now to May. I love the place, I love the culture there. Mm. I think people there are as keen on cycling as they are in the UK now, and you get that same sort of vibe, really, that people are, if not more passionate there than they are in Britain about it. And I think they've been robbed in a way a little bit with everything that's gone on. Mm. And
gee, the Beckham cycling, is that?
Well, no, I don't know about that. Who knows? I mean, I don't know what, like I said, I just focus on this year, really. And then at the end of this year, see where the future goes, really, you know, with everything in mind.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. Interviews and analysis. We've got the big talking points covered.
So here we are, we're still in the games room at the hotel. There's the sound of pool balls. now, Orla, you were at the Tour Down Under as well, and I think you spent a bit of time with Team Sky there, their new recruit, Philip Dagnan, and others. What were your impressions of the team there?
There's a really good bunch of guys down there in terms of media access. Anyway, they're all incredibly affable. Philip Dagnan, I think, has made quite an impression on the other guys.
On you, certainly.
I don't know what you mean by that, Richard. They were all talking him up, even at the start of the week, and saying how, yeah, fair enough, we had Richie Porte and Geraint Thomas co-leading the team, if you like, but Philip Dagnan, a decent third option. They all say he's in great form, he seems to be a really good influence in the team, they get on really well. And it's going to be a big year for him, obviously, because with the Giro d'Italia starting in Ireland, starting in Ulster, he is an Ulster man, I think he's going to be getting an awful lot of attention.
He's pretty much, you know, guaranteed, I mean, that's his... He's been told that that's in his programme.
That's his gig. Yeah. I think it would take unforeseen circumstances for him not to get there. Injury, whatever. Mm. But yeah, so he's going to be their big star, certainly at the start of the Giro. The whole team down there seemed to be in fairly good form. Richie Porte was... They were hoping, obviously, to come away with the Joker jersey or at least get onto the podium. Didn't manage that. But Richie showed some incredible form, and I was really impressed by him, especially in the penultimate stage, Old Wollongong Hill, when he blew the field apart. We saw Cadel Evans climbing incredibly well, and yet he just could not keep up with Richie. So I think what he's showing, the form he's showing, and the potential he's showing for the season ahead, which should be a big season for him if he can target the Giro the way he wants to, I think, showing incredibly well. Geraint Thomas riding really well as well. His big target, I think, early season is the Tour of Flanders. That's one that he absolutely loves and really wants to nail.
The classics.
The classics.
We spoke to Dave Brailsford a little bit yesterday about, you know, last year was supposed to be the big classics year. They didn't do well, and I asked him if they'd learned a lot from that campaign, and he said yes. And it's still, they still haven't won a big classic. They've, you know, Juan Antonio Fletcher won Het Nieuwsblad in their first year. That's about as good as it's got. I spoke to Gabriel Rash yesterday, who's about to have his last few months as a rider with Team Sky before becoming a director sportif, and classics are something he's obviously been very interested in as a rider. And I asked him about his countryman Edvald Boasenhagen, who's, you know, he won Gent-Wevelgem before he joined Team Sky, and an awful lot has been expected of him. He probably hasn't delivered, and I think the reasons for that are, you know, that he's had some bad luck. He had some bad injuries and sort of ill health last year that we perhaps didn't know the full extent of at the time. But I think there's something mentally as well that he's in that sort of top category of riders, Cancellara, Boone and Sagan, who's physically capable of winning these races and being there. But there's something that stops him winning these races. Interestingly, Rash, I asked him what race he thought Boasenhagen was most suited to, the choice I thought being sort of Flanders or Roubaix. He said Milan-San Remo is the race that he thinks he should win, but he's never been there. Perhaps this year, because it's a harder finale, could actually favour him. But what were your thoughts on, because the team down at the Tour Down Under is the nucleus of the classic squad, isn't it?
Yeah, and they're super motivated this year. And you say that last year there was a big focus on the classics, and there was. But I think that was more sort of veering in that direction rather than properly targeting it. So I remember speaking to Rod Ellingworth at the end of 2012, and he said even then, okay, we're targeting the classics in 2013 because we realise that's something we've got to go for, but 2014 is the year that we really want to deliver on it. So there wasn't a massive expectation last year. It was just a change of focus to a certain extent in the early season. This year, I think they are very much up for it. And like I say, I mentioned Geraint Thomas, you could tell when he's talking about the Tour of Flanders that it's something that really fires him up and he really wants it. And speaking to Dave Brailsford as well, they recognise that that is a gap in their collective palmaris. It's something that they really want to nail this season. It's not one of the ones that will grab headlines necessarily back home among non-cycling fans, but for them, they know that, okay, Grand Tour is fantastic. Obviously, it is the pinnacle, but at the same time, they really want to nail those one-day classics. And Boasenhagen, I think, I mean, you compare him to the other guys, Cancellara, Boonen, etc. We've got to remember, he's still young. He's been on the big scene for a long time, but he's got an awful lot of years ahead of him, I would think. And it's about, I think, mentally preparing him for that as well. He's quite a shy guy, can be quite timid off the bike. I think he's needed the last couple of years to get his race head on, you know, his A game.
I suppose that's what I was getting at. He doesn't come across as a kind of killer that you need to be. They were much maligned last year for going to Tenerife to prepare for the Belgian, the Northern European classics. Are they doing that again, do you know? Or
I don't know if they're going to. No, I haven't heard. Yeah, no. Yeah.
Well,
what a strange one.
Let's hear a little bit from Dave Brailsford and also Gabba Rash, who talks about his final few months as a rider before stepping into the team car.
Anything new this year? Anything changed? Or?
I didn't do anything really, I'd say, this year. Is that this off-season, we had the chance of getting everybody together. There was an entire team to focus on performance and focus on the team. Whereas last year we missed that, really. The whole Armstrong thing broke. And that kind of hijacked our one occasion of getting everybody together every year, because we can only do it once a year. Whereas this year, instead of doing it in November, we tacked 3 days on to the start of our initial camp here and came here for 3 days, went to the local cinema stroke theatre and sat in there for 3 days and talked about what we're all about. Did the often overlooked, but can't be, you know, overstated in terms of its importance, but, you know, what's the values of the team? You know, what's our value systems? What do we stand for? What are we all about? What are we trying to do? And get some real clarity, but also getting the team to feed back their input about what they think, you know? So it was invaluable. That's kind of recalibrated and reset everybody, you know, which is important.
Which you think was missing last year?
I do think, yeah. I think any team needs that constant reminder of it, what its values are, and remind everybody about what we stand for, you know. It's one of those things where if you do it and it doesn't quite hit the spot, it sounds very corporate and same words, same values that you could write from in any corporate, you know. Company that'll be on the wall stuck somewhere in terms of, you know, trust, respect, honesty and all those other things, you know. And I genuinely believe in it, and I think that it's not me telling people, it's me saying here's an opportunity for us as a team to voice what we really think. and to just kind of reconfirm what we're all about, you know. So we asked everybody, staff and riders, what do they think that's worked, you know, what's brought us success, and what could stop us, you know, continuing and being successful in the future. And I think, you know, that got some very, very good feedback, very honest feedback. Just, it's just that resetting, you know, and then everybody has to sign up to it, and either you're in or you're not. But if you're not, if you don't believe in it, what we're trying to do, then off you pop, and we'll get somebody who does, you know.
This time last year, we spent a lot of time talking about the classics.
Yeah.
Is it still as burning a desire to?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's a gaping hole in our palmares so far, and we'd like to try and sort that out for sure.
Did you learn a lot from last year's campaign?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. You know, like anything else, you know, if you take a group, the entire group, and go through a certain sort of regime, as it were, it's going to work for some. Some people are going in the middle, and some people are going to go, "Well, it didn't work for me," you know. So I think it's trying to get the best of everybody to make sure that everybody's in the best possible shape going into the classics. But I would say at this moment in time, I think we've got more chance of winning one of the Ardennes classics than a Copper Classic, as it stands at the minute, you know. And we weren't close last year, so yeah, go back and try again.
So an interesting season for you ahead, a transition mid season.
Yeah.
How are you looking forward to that new role, first of all?
Oh, it's going to be a big change, and it's a little bit strange in the beginning last year when I knew, but now when everything synced in, then I'm really motivated for it and really looking forward to it.
When was that decided? When was it first suggested that this could be something for you?
Like in August, September last year.
Was it something you suggested, or was it the team that came to you with the idea?
It was the team.
Yeah.
Awesome, yeah.
Is it something you'd ever thought about? Did you want to become a DH?
I have thought about it.
Yeah. And have you done anything beyond, you know, obviously riding? Have you studied other DSs? Are there any DSs that you kind of look on as inspirations?
Well, it's everybody I've been working with so far, all the teams I've been in. And I've kind of been road captain in some races. It's just I love cycling and I love being involved in cycling, and it's kind of, instead of stopping with cycling, stopping with everything, I'm still in the sport and still have other goals. So yeah.
Was it something you had to think about, or was it something you instantly thought, yeah, that's for me?
Yeah, I definitely had to think about it. Speak with my girlfriend about it, because traveling will be about the same. So yeah.
Were you thinking about retirement as a rider anyway, or?
I intended to go on a couple of years more, but I'm 37 years old now, so it's not like I'm gonna would have been riding many years.
It
anyway.
Was too good an opportunity to turn.
Yeah,
down.
Yeah, definitely.
How is Edvald going, and what do you think he's capable of achieving this year?
Well, I think he's capable of winning one of the big classics. I think that's been one of his it's been one of his biggest goals since he was since he came here, and that's what he's destined to do. He hasn't really had all his luck on his side, especially last year. Yeah, he was sick and he got the stomach bug, and there was something with his knee, and he didn't really got to train as what he wanted to do, so he didn't get to prepare that good. He is one of those guys who definitely have something extra, like Sagan, Cancellara and those guys, so he's capable of doing that.
So he's a versatile rider, and you know the classics very well. What race would you say is he? Paris-Roubaix or Flanders? Which race most suits him, do you think?
Yeah, ask me. I would say Milan-San Remo is the race that suits him best, but he hasn't really gone that good in that race yet. I think he just needs to be on top from San Remo to Roubaix and then take his chances the whole way.
Be in race-winning form.
Yeah,
for a
yeah.
You're listening to the Humans Invent Cycling Podcast, powered by Sharp.
So, Orla, a notable absentee from this training camp is Chris Froome, who is training in South Africa, which is quite odd in a way, but he's been down there for a while. Tim Kerrison, the head of performance, not head of performance, head of performance analysis or something. Head of performance.
Something technical.
Something. He's a coach. Yeah. He's a physiologist.
He's a numbers man.
He's a guy. He's a guy that works on the team, doing something sports sciencey. He was down. He spent a week with Froome last week. Apparently, they were robbed by baboons. Baboons broke into their apartment and took all Froome's energy food. So there's some pretty strong baboons going around South Africa.
Watch out if you're riding in South Africa and get attacked by a baboon.
Watch out for the baboons. Mm. But Froome is down there. We spoke, obviously, to Bradley Wiggins and Brailsford about the relationship between Froome and Wiggins. I mean, if Wiggins making absolutely no bones about the fact that, that Froome is like someone who could dominate the tour for a few years. Brailsford talking about, I mean, Wiggins obviously understands as well the challenge of backing up, of being a tour winner and dealing with all that entails. And Brailsford spoke a little bit about how Froome has coped with that. He says he coped with it pretty well. I don't think it was on the same level as Wiggins. But that he's hungry and very, very focused on defending his title. Did you speak to Bradley about that at all? Did you have any thoughts on how things are going to pan out between him and Froome this year? They're going to race together for the first time at Tirreno Adriatico,
yeah,
which will be
right.
for the first time since the Worlds and before that, since the Tour of Oman last
year. I didn't speak to Bradley about it for a specific reason. I thought that was a story, and it was very real. It was generated by the two guys themselves. It wasn't something that was stirred up by the media.
As we are accused of.
As we are accused
which is
precisely.
Which is a little bit ridiculous.
Well, that's the reason I didn't bring it up, because I do think it's done and dusted. I don't think that they are best buds in the way that they're perhaps trying to portray in the media. I don't think that it's all behind them, but they're both professional guys. They know how to ride together. They both know what they're trying to do. They want to win the yellow jersey for the team again. They know that Chris is best suited for that. They know they will have an incredible team around them, and if they work hard together, that it's a very real possibility again. So I just thought, I didn't want to stir that up again. I think it can be quite lazy sometimes as well, and it can be just revisiting old territory. And also, I spent some time with Chris at the end of last year on his homecoming to Kenya. Got a real feeling for what he's like as a rider. And you say it's unusual him being in South Africa, but he's someone who does his own thing. He knows his own mind.
This is the first time, though, he's not been part of the training camp.
That's true, but he did spend most of last winter in South Africa as well. Mm. So it's where he likes to ride. It's the roads that he knows, the altitude, the climbs, the weather. It's something that he's incredibly familiar with. Of course, he's missing the training camp. But at the same time, again, if he'd come here, we'd all be talking about Froome and Wiggins. So him staying away actually kind of works. And Wiggins is great with dealing with those kind of questions. You know what, if they can get on the start line together in Yorkshire and they're of the right mentality and they've got the right team around them, it could be an absolutely incredible team and a formidable team. Regardless of what happens, there will be so much to talk about. We'll all be scrutinising them
and
anyway.
I take issue with you saying it's done and dusted. I'm not sure about that. I think it's still
Not done and dusted.
No,
it's not done and dusted at all.
No, and I think it all hinges really on Wiggins' attitude at the tour and going into the tour.
Yeah.
And the way he was talking yesterday, he talked pretty convincingly about accepting that his role there would be to support Chris, while still mentioning that if anything should happen, you know, he could be there.
Because he knows that
he knows, and he knows that you know that you have to just to be in the team, you have to be capable. He has to be pretty close to the form he was in 2012, if not in the same form. So, in his mind, he might keep his options open, but an awful lot depends on how much he, on his attitude going into it, and his willingness. He'll be, you know, we didn't mention earlier that he's targeting Paris-Roubaix this year as well, and obviously the cobbled stage of the tour, he'll be looking at that one as one where, you know, he certainly is up there helping Froome or being there, being present.
I think that's interesting that Paris-Roubaix is one of his targets. He says that it's not as any kind of a recce for the cobbles, but I think we can probably fairly safely assume that that will play into his thinking. Mm-hmm. So much will just depend on how they work together, and I think Bradley Wiggins will realise as well that Chris Froome is a defending champion. He is the rider who could go on to win several more tours. So if he's not on the side of Chris Froome, he's not in the Tour de France, really, even though he's a defending champion, which is quite surprising, striking, whatever. But it's still all on Chris Froome's back this year, so Bradley Wiggins
has to have his back. It's on Chris Froome's back, but yeah, absolutely. Now, so let's hear a little bit more from Dave Brailsford and Bradley Wiggins talking about this issue, going into the Tour, Wiggins, Froome. Here they are.
How are things between him and Chris? Because I think, you know, you said that it was an issue last year. Was it partly an issue because last season was, as you said, or last winter, was hijacked by the Armstrong thing, a lot of sort of firefighting over the winter? Did that mean that you weren't able to maybe deal with that issue last winter?
I think you guys last winter. It's a great story, isn't it, mate? And the reality is it's no longer a story, isn't it?
So you're confident that Brad, if he goes to the tour, would be working, you know, happy to sacrifice for Chris?
100%. I'm sorry, but you've eked out the last little, you've squeezed, wrung that one dry.
It's fair to ask, because the tension was clearly there last year, though. So, and as you just said, you know, you didn't have that opportunity the way that you would have wanted last year. Maybe, you know, now everyone...
And there's a time and a place, you know, and yeah. People got different race programmes. Why? Team goals, try and win the tour, and go on from there, which we did.
And how about Chris? I mean, as we saw with Brad, it's challenging to deal with being a tour winner.
Very challenging.
You know, he had probably a bit of a disappointment at the World Championships, but... How would you compare him to this time last year in terms of, you know, is he as committed to win the Tour this year as he was to win it last year?
Yeah, you can't get away from the fact that if you win a major sporting event, things happen as a consequence of that, which are totally detrimental to trying to go and win it again. Mm. And I think you see it with a lot of the Olympic gold medalists. You see that sort of next couple of seasons. There's a lull, if you like. You've seen it maybe with Andy Murray. It's a human phenomenon, you know. And it's very, very easy to explain. But I think he's managed it really well. To be fair, he's had his time to go and do all his bits and bobs, and he's now in South Africa. And Tim's just been over there for a week with him. Apart from being robbed by the baboons,
and Chris.
No, all our guys, the signs everywhere apparently where they are. The big issue over there is don't leave the gates undone, don't leave the door undone, because the baboons go in and nick your food, and they left the door open. So all his propeptide was nicked by the baboons. He got like massive.
Chris and Tim, you were there, was it? Or
Chris and Tim, yeah. So Chris went back there for a period. He went back for 6 weeks,
So
really consistent, good, knuckle down. Come on, no distractions, just go out there and get the work done. And that's what he's done. And he's put some really good training together, to be fair. But I wouldn't say he feels the... I think, you know, the idea of going into Oman and hitting it hard, and I don't think that the necessity of doing that is the same this year. I think you can come into the season a little bit more. And I think he was also trying to earn the respect of his teammates in terms of his ability to lead. Mm-hmm. And one of the issues, you know, one of the challenges for him last year was to get more experience as the leader of a team. So every opportunity that we had, we thought, right, okay, let's try and refine that, you know, which he did really well.
I mean, are there things you mentioned on French TV and stuff? You couldn't do that if you were the leader of the team winning the tour.
Yeah.
Are there things that you wouldn't miss as well, but not?
I kind of did that 2 years ago when I was leading, you know, and you know, it's that whole thing that I did mention to the press team, and they loved it when I was talking in December about I was watching Gladiator, the film Gladiator, in the winter, and. Our culture hasn't really changed since Roman times, ancient Rome, you know, in that Colosseum, really. And the crowd in the Colosseum are pretty much Twitter now, and, you know, all these people. Yeah, they are. And it's that whole thing, do you die or thumbs up, you know what I mean? And if you win your crowd, you win your freedom. And I thought that line in that film, I just thought, God, that's just like the Tour de France. You know, you win the crowd over the Tour. And I sort of felt like I did that, especially with the French public 2 years ago. Part of that's because I spoke French. But I also had a laugh of them in French on the show, and that, and the likes of Jalabert and that. When he was asking those sorts of questions, you know, and then I'd sort of turn it around on him. And then the French reporters and all that. So it was, I kind of won my freedom, if you like. Whereas the opposite happened with Chris last year, where it was just constant on him, grilling him, because his performances were so great last year that he got that. And so it'd be nice to go back to the Tour, and if anything, you know, take the pressure off Chris a little bit and answer those questions for him and challenge people on him, you know. So,
have you communicated much with Chris over the winter?
Not over the Christmas period. We were here in December.
Yeah.
And we spent a lot of time together in December. We trained most days. We had our annual team party here that year. So,
and you spoke about what happened last year.
Well, we just spoke, you know. I think we saw each other at the Worlds, but there's so much going on at the Worlds within the team anyway, that we, apart from just talking on the bike, we didn't really, there was a lot of contract talks going on at the time that he was in meetings and stuff, so we didn't actually get to just talk. Whereas when we were here, it was the first time that we just sort of were in a room like this and just chatting, or out on the bike chatting, and just being around each other, which we hadn't had since the Tour of Oman last year. So, you know, it just, I think that was a lesson for us all this year, was just spending more time together, really. And then stuff doesn't really get lost through the, through, you know, you're not reading about someone through the newspapers, if you like, you know. I think it's just a, it was a better way. I mean,
so you feel positive about that relationship?
Oh, definitely, yeah. Forward. I think we're actually looking forward to racing together, rather than sort of not dreading it, but like, well, what's going to happen when we do go and race together, you know, what's it going to be like? So I think it's nice when it's like that.
The Cycling Podcast with humansinvent.com. Innovation, craftsmanship and design.
Okay, so in this final part of the podcast, we'll hear from Danny Pate and Ian Boswell, who are both Americans at opposite ends of the age spectrum. Danny Pate is a veteran now, I suppose you could describe him. He's been around for quite a few years. And he's been at Sky for a couple of years now, and just had his contract extended. He's a sort of underappreciated rider, but that's from a public point of view. From
the
rider's point of view, within the team, he's a very popular, very, very valued member of the team. And an interesting guy who's always entertaining on Twitter. He's always quite outspoken in a sometimes cryptic way. I mentioned at the end of our interview, you know, this, he had a little spat with Lance Armstrong about recently on Twitter, which is worth looking at. Pate is one of these guys who's just quietly asserted that he has never been part of the doping culture. And my impression is, has always been, that he's not had an awful lot of time for guys who've been part of that, and have, even those that have been part of it and moved on and say that they're not part of it anymore. He sort of stands apart a little bit in a lot of ways. And I sat down with him and Ian Boswell, who was a neopro last year with Joe Dombrowski, two very, very young, very promising young Americans. And I just thought it'd be interesting to hear what Danny thought about Ian Boswell's first year, what Ian Boswell thinks about Danny Pate, etc., etc., and his own verdict on his first year. Orla, you had much to deal with Ian Boswell or Joe Dombrowski, for that matter.
Joe's a quieter figure, I think, than Ian. I haven't been at very many races with either of them, so I've seen them at the training camp more than anything else. Ian is such an impressive character. I mean, if you deal with any kind of elite athletes, cycling is no exception. At the very top, they tend to be quite quirky characters. There's often something that drives someone, sometimes a darkness, if you like, that makes them push themselves really hard. Ian Boswell just seems like a really rounded, well-mannered
person. Ian Dombrowski,
they're
well brought up, kind of well-mannered. It is interesting that they turned pro, both of them, you know, within months of the Armstrong downfall. And I asked Joe Dombrowski last year, you know, whether his parents had concerns about him moving to Europe and becoming part of this world. And, you know, he spoke quite interestingly on that topic, as Ian Boswell has as well.
They just blow you down with a breath of fresh air. They are just, if you needed any kind of inspiration or hope for the future of cycling, these guys absolutely embody it. And it's on the bike, off the bike, their entire attitude. They are fantastic. And it's interesting you say about Lance Armstrong and last year and whatnot. And I remember hosting a Team Sky dinner at the end of last year, and Dave Brailsford stood up, and it was quite a sombre mood in the camp, really, because obviously the whole sport was engulfed in the aftermath. And Dave said, you know what, these two guys epitomise why we've got to do things differently. Because if their parents, and you say, you know, they come all the way from America, they're really young, they're entrusting their lives, their careers, their livelihoods to this team. And, you know, Sir Dave Brailsford said that that's the reason that they try to do it the way that they're trying to do it.
I don't think he was Sir Dave Brailsford at the time, actually.
Was he not? Hang on, that was 2013.
Anyway,
A minor point.
Let's hear from Danny Pate and Ian Boswell. Ian, you're about to start your second year with Team Sky, second year as a professional. What's your verdict on year one, and what are you hoping for from this year?
I learned a lot last year. You know, coming into a new team, you're just kind of not thrown in, but you know, I was on the team, just kind of go through the motions. And like, now looking back on the year, like, there was a lot of things that I wasn't doing, like, completely professional, just like, you know, because I was worried about so many other aspects to my life, you know, getting set up in France and, you know, trying to make it a comfortable situation over there. You know, so there's always like distractions, and then all, you know, combining this with an increased training load, racing load, you know, traveling more, you know, all while trying to fit in with a professional team, and not just any professional team, with Team Sky. So,
what was most difficult, do you think? Was it the transition to Europe and lifestyle?
I think it was really everything kind of all thrown into one. You know, I had, you know, some knee injuries that, you know, also set back my training. So then, like, you know, just it's kind of a domino effect, isn't it? Like, one thing goes bad and just kind of lose your focus. So going forward this year, like, I've made some drastic changes, but it's not really anything like nothing major, just kind of some simple things that I've done at home, just maximize my recovery and training. And like I said, coming back to a team for the second year is so much easier. You know the guys, you know who you want to be within a pace line, who you don't want to be within a pace line, you know, the good people to room with, you know, and you're just much more comfortable within the situation, you know, just in there sitting with Brailsford and, you know, just joking around for last year, kind of a bit intimidated, you know, like, oh man, like, this is...
Do you feel quite comfortable now in this environment? I mean, what was the biggest thing you learned last year, would you say?
I would just say how the biggest, like, thing I've kind of taken into this year is just how amazing of an opportunity this is. And that, you know, I had a couple of friends last year who were on other Pro Tour teams who signed, you know, a year before myself, young riders, and they lost their spot. And just realizing that it is a small opportunity that we have, and that if you're not giving everything, like, that'd be the worst thing, is to look back in, you know, 3 years when this contract's up, and, you know, go back to racing a domestic team, and thinking, like, well, shit, like, I might never get back to that level. You know, I gave up this opportunity, and I wasn't actually given 100%. So the biggest thing going forward is just trying to race and train without any sort of regret. You know, you go to race, and if I do 100% in training, preparation, recovery, and then get to a race and I don't meet expectations of the team and I, you know, am out of the Pro Tour, then I can be happy with that because I gave 100%. But if you're not giving 100%, and then you look back and kind of kicking yourself in the shin, thinking, what was I...
Who's having a sharp focus for this year?
Yeah, exactly. But it's more, like I said, it's nothing crazy, just like making it part of my lifestyle and how I go about things, and just being a bit more professional in every aspect. And especially, you know, on a team like this, when you have amazing riders, it's, you know, small things add up to, you know, all the difference, you know, the recovery, training, like the consistency in training, trying to keep up with, you know, guys like Richie and Paranese last year. You know, it's, you start to see these subtle differences between riders and what gets you to that level.
Danny, I mean, as a fellow American, do you take particular interest in Ian and Joe Dombrowski as well? I mean, did you find yourself sort of mentoring them a bit last year, helping them out, or
no?
Shakes his head.
I did try to grow a mustache like him, but that didn't work out.
Not many can grow a mustache like that. How did you? What was your verdict on their first year? How did you feel they got on?
I think they did really well. You know, like, you kind of, from outside perspective, you might not have seen some of the things they had to take on, and you'd look at maybe just results, and to some people, I don't know what they thought, like, but when you go from you jump up a league and you're doing really well in the league lower, the younger class, or kind of the amateurs, under 23s, and then you come to a Pro Tour and you come to a big team like Sky, it's kind of a different world, and, you know, they're not going to be winning the races, and it's not like, when you look at just results, then the results continue to be there. It's easy to judge how well they've done, but it's harder to see that when it's not reflected in the results. And, you know, that's normal for a young rider. So from the outside looking in, it's hard to see what they've gone through and what they've been able to overcome. It's a lot for a young rider to, like Wolfram said, I think Joe had always lived at home, right?
Yeah, he's not always ever
by himself. Joe had always lived at home.
In a foreign country, yeah.
And
by
then,
yourself.
Like, just that in itself is a big leap forward and a big growing pain or something that he has to overcome just to race his bike, you know? And, like Ian was saying, both of them had some injuries last year, like, or some hard times with their knees and, you know, that takes its toll, and then you add in the race schedule, and then the team sky of how it works. It's be a hard team to come to for a younger rider because we don't really just ride through the races. We kind of, a lot of times the team is asking our members to kind of dictate the race more than a lot of other teams would. They're thrown into races like Paris-Nice, and you know, Ian's asked to ride the front with me and then try to set the race up for our guys instead of just kind of like running through the race and doing a bit less, which is easier for younger riders. Mm-hmm. So in that respect, I think there's a lot more going on that they've been doing and going through than you can see in any results page.
I mean, how difficult is that to go from being a guy who wins races in your age category to, as Danny says, doing a job, you know, in a race like Paris-Nice? How, you know, mentally, how did you find that? And physically as well.
It was a huge shock, you know, because I came from, you know, a domestic team in the U.S. where you go to every race with almost like an objective of winning, or you're, you know, the lead rider. Then they came here, and like, I was at the camp in, you know, last December, January, before we started racing. You're like, you're doing okay in training. You're, you know, matching guys and efforts and whatnot. And I wasn't, I don't want to say I was like cocky, but you're like, oh, this will be fine. Like, for example, like we had like, you know, like Zondio. I'd never heard of the guy before. I was like, who is this guy? And
would naive be the word?
Yeah, naive. Like, let's just, you know, there's pros. Is that the one? I guess like Danny would be almost a similar type rider, except for he's American, so I know who he is.
Yeah.
You know, guys who just kind of go under the radar a bit. You know, I don't know if Zandio's ever even. So I think he's won one race in his career and has been pro for 15 years.
But he's an unbelievable rider.
Yeah, but yeah, so you in training you're like, you know, like, oh well, I was, you know, the top of my class last year, so this will be an easy transition. And then you get into the races, you know, in a race like Paris-Nice, like Danny said, you know, my first pro tour race. Well, I'd only done a couple days in Mallorca and Algarve before, which weren't too difficult. So you go to a race like that, and you're like, oh, I can handle this. And then all of a sudden, you know, everyone here is good. Like, you know, there's a crosswind 50K ahead, and people are already fighting for position. And I'm at the back, and I'm fighting for 10 minutes. And I touch my brakes, and I'm at the back again. And it's just like, this is challenging.
I spoke to Joe in Oman about, he was struggling as well with just the peloton, riding in the bunch.
Yeah, well, a bit like Danny said, too, like, and it's not like we're just at these races. You know, if I was on maybe a smaller team and I go to a race like Paris-Nice, like, okay, like, let's see, just get through the race. But it was from the start, like, you know, we're riding for Richie to win. And, you know, it's a huge race, Paris-Nice, and we wound up winning, which is, you know, fantastic. But it was almost more of an expectation from the team to win that race than, like, you know, we didn't, there's no, like, you know, congratulations,
champagne,
you won.
Court.
Yeah, exactly. But it's like, all right, everyone go home, you Couture Internationals next weekend. You know, so it's, you know, if I was on FDJ or something and you win Paris-Nice, like, holy shit, like, we just made our whole season in one race. But here is almost, you know, you kind of forget that how good this team is. And, you know, that you look at it now, like, for myself this year trying to get into a Grand Tour, it's the same thing. It's not like, you know, on some smaller teams. Or
I was going to ask, is that your main sort of goal this year?
Yeah, I mean, we're doing Tour California, which is, you know, huge race to go back to, and you hopefully have some aspirations there. And a few other races, you know, Tour of Austria, Tour of Swiss, races I'd like to do well in personally that might have an opportunity. But I'd like to do a Grand Tour this year, like the Vuelta.
Vuelta's your most.
But then again, even on a, like I said, on a team like this, they're not just going to send me to the Vuelta to, hey, try to make it to stage 15, and then we can pull out if you need. You know, it's, you're going there because, you know, now wants to win it, or, you know, someone's going there to win the race. So they need all nine riders, you know, for every stage. So it's, in order to get onto a team that does a Grand Tour here at Sky, it's, you know, much more difficult. So you have to earn your spot, really.
And Danny, what you've been around a lot of teams, a lot of good teams, but you've been at Sky now for a couple of years. How settled are you here? How much do you enjoy being part of this team?
Oh, I really enjoy being here, you know. I feel valued, and they like what I'm doing for them. That's why they extended my contract. And what I get back from them in just respect, and like me saying what I want to do for training, or periodizing when I want to go back to the U.S. for a little bit to take like a little time just away from the team or away from the racing. And they allow me to do that, kind of trusting in me that when I come to the race, I'll be prepared. I really like that. That's enough for me to be in such a still high-stress environment. You know, I could probably go to a smaller team and have a lot less kind of pressure, even though there's a lot of pressure here, you know, because the team is always racing to win. They're always racing to race. They're training to race to win. And even down to guys like me and Ian, since there's so much pressure to win, winning is almost like, it's not really an objective, it's just kind of like,
it's more expected.
It's more like reward, it's more like what we do rather than what we aspire to do. Mm. So I don't know if pressure is the right word, but it's just everyone wants to operate it at kind of a higher level all the time.
And what, do you have personal goal? I know you were riding the Giro last year to help Wiggins there, but do you have a personal goal to maybe ride the Tour or something this year and help Froome try and defend his title? To be a part of a Tour winning team, is that something you'd really like to do personally?
Yeah, I would love to be there or at the Giro for Richie. Currently, my schedule is kind of a little up in the air between the Giro and Tour of California since we've added that on this year. A better example here would be last year with like Brad at the Giro. It was kind of one of my main objectives for the year, and you know, I was really kind of looking forward to just being a part of that. There's just a whole nother intensity level, or when something like that's happening, Brad's going for the Giro, the same as Brad was going for the Tour the year before, and that you can actually win, the team can actually win, and it's really important that you show up and you're at your best to help that, you know, the team time trial or protecting the lead if we have the lead and things like that. There's just a higher level of expectation and accountability, really.
Just finally, did you get your U.S. National Road Race Champions jersey that you were pleading for on Twitter, which got you into an exchange with Lance Armstrong there? Has that arrived in the post yet?
I don't know. I mean, I haven't been home, so maybe it's there. But you know, I don't need that. I don't really care what all these record books say about those particular guys. It's just because a lot of the guys that were racing there, like me, they know that those guys were totally full of it, you know. And you know, in a way, it's just a shame that a lot of the other guys in that race had to race against those guys that were doing that kind of thing. And you know, it wasn't just me; there was a lot of other guys out there too. And
do you look at Ian and Joe with not envy, but you?
Yeah, I do.
Confidence or envy. Maybe envy is the right word, is it?
Yeah, I mean, I think that they're really fortunate to be 10 years younger than I am. And, like, I see cycling completely different than I do 10, 15 years ago. And I think they're really fortunate. I mean, that I believe that a lot of leaps and bounds have come with the blood passport and a lot of other things to help make our sport and other sports, you know, more drug-free and competitively fair to a lot of people. And you know, and then also just that they have teams like this, and there's a lot of other teams out there that are really easy to go to as Americans, and compared to back 15 years ago when there was only the Postal Service and then a lot lower rings of teams. But now there's a vast opening to help any kind of American cyclists, really. Even the British are accepting us a little bit.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. For more articles, go to humansinvent.com/cycling.
So that was Danny Pate and Ian Boswell. Interesting there. I didn't want to put the word in his mouth that word envy, which I felt was too strong. But Danny Pate was adamant that envy is what he feels for some of the younger riders coming into the sport now, which I thought was very interesting. He's always an interesting guy to talk to. And hopefully you've enjoyed this special Team Sky Training Camp podcast, Humans Invent podcast. Orla, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you. Pleasure as ever.
The Humans Invent Cycling Podcast. Interviews and analysis. We've got the big talking points covered.